couple of weeks ago, San Francisco violinist and all things considered listener David Refkin came across this piece of music, Berceuse Slave, by a composer named Neruda. He was amused by it, performed it, recorded it, and sent it to us for an obvious reason. David Refkin could not have known that he was contributing to a project that I'd already conceived of for broadcast today, the 19th birthday of All Things Considered. Thinking of all the bits and hints and snatches of the All Things Considered theme that we've heard in other compositions, what about a kind of musical title search for the antecedents of our theme music written in the 1970s by composer Don Vagely? For the search, we commissioned the host of NPR's Performance Today, certified music maven Martin Goldsmith. What did you find?
Well, Robert, I found that we all remember the movie 2001, where this monolith appears throughout the ages. Turns out that the All Things Considered theme could be considered something of a musical monolith.
It keeps on exactly.
It appears in the misty time far, far back, and as recently as last decade, it's been with us.
Our man Neruda, whom we just heard,
right.
Was, I gather, not necessarily the first that we found in this title search.
Well, actually, he does go pretty much towards the beginning of the musical time span. Neruda is an interesting character. He was a cellist who lived in Prague and took part in the premieres of a number of the chamber works of Smetana and Dvorak. He happened to be in the right place at the right time a number of times, and while he had nothing better to do, he suddenly absorbed this All Things Considered theme, where it was out in the ether somewhere, and put it into one of his works.
He even had those things that we call the dinks, right?
You know, exactly.
The warm-up, da-dink-da-dink.
Right, right. But actually, one can't even go farther back in time and find a German composer best known for his operas named Carl Maria von Weber. He was born in the 1780s, and in 1801, he was sitting around at the piano when, as far as I can tell, this musical monolith suddenly came to him and went into his fingers. And in the fourth of a little set of two piano works that he composed, suddenly he found his fingers moving over the keyboards and making sounds something like this.
This piece is by Weber.
Carl Maria von Weber.
And to say that it's like our theme might be the understatement of the week.
Well, it's spooky, and again, I think this adds to my theory, which I may publish in the New England Journal of Medicine or Music in the near future, about this monolithic idea of the All Things Considered theme, how it keeps appearing.
Now, on some occasions, this monolith, as you say, it appeared. Obviously, Weber was right in front of it when it appeared that time. For others, it has been a slightly more fleeting experience.
Fleeting, sort of glimpsed afar, as if at the horizon, as if you're in the woods and you suddenly think you see something behind one of the trees and you turn and it's gone. Well, the composer Franz Berwald, in 1828, he wrote a septet, a chamber work for seven instruments. And in the finale of that septet, if you listen hard, if you don't let too many of these notes go past you, you will catch the All Things Considered monolithic theme. You heard that? Da 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 dum. And you can imagine da 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 dum.
Now that is not a full presentation of our, as you say, monolith.
No, it's not there, but certainly half of the monolith, one or two of the legs of the monolith is certainly there.
When does our musical monolith make its next major appearance that you've been able to detect? There could be others.
Yes, I'm sure there are others, but it next reappears in the early years of the 19th century with a composer named Robert Schumann, who was both a great composer and a wonderful critic.
And this man was also visited by our theme.
He was visited by our theme, which is not at all inconsistent with the story of Schumann, because his younger sister went sort of round the bend and committed suicide when he was a boy. And he was always convinced that one day the same thing would happen to him, that he would go crazy. And in fact, he jumped off a bridge into the River Rhine when he was much older. But Schumann, in his more lucid moments, actually wrote down that he was hearing strange themes that had never come to him before.
It just adds weight to your thesis, right?
Adds weight to the thesis, and at least the first time that it occurred to him, it was fleeting. It was sort of as fleeting, if not more fleeting, than the Franz Berwald example we just heard.
Let's hear it fleet.
Let's hear it fleet. You again have to use your imagination. Mm-hmm. This is in the finale of his piano quintet.
Ah.
There you see.
I heard it. With your help.
Imagine some dinks in there.
You'd have to imagine quite a few, too. Now, this was, as we said, a fleeting glimpse of our theme.
Right.
But this was not the only encounter between Schumann and our theme.
No. And it became stronger as he realized what he had to work with here. His first symphony. He again toyed with that theme. This time it becomes a bit more distinct. I mean...
We're not reaching a little bit. I mean, Schumann having encountered our monolith could do no better than that?
Well, as a matter of fact, Robert, he could do better than that, a lot better than that, because one day the monolith came to him and he finally realized he'd been struggling against its effects for too long. Now he would open his mind and his heart and absorb this great, all things considered, monolith. And in a very lovely piano piece, which he called simply Arabesque, the all things considered theme came to its full flowering.
There it is, unmistakable and beautiful, as perceived by Schumann.
Oh, yes, and in fact, he used that same theme throughout the Arabesque. It's uncanny how finally he came to realize what a wonderful theme he had on his hands.
Now, did the message of our all things considered theme and the monolith, as you imagine it, did it end with Schumann or did it return?
Oh, no, it returned. In fact, it returned in our own time when Elvis Presley went into the army. That was such a cosmic event for the youth of our nation that this musical monolith, as if in a dream, returns to Earth.
Hello, Mr. Hankel. This is Harvey Johnson. Can I speak to Penelope Ann?
And there it is.
And there it is once more, courtesy of Lee Adams and Charles Strauss and Bye Bye Birdie. Obviously, the monolithic theme is enough to have one's voice crack if one has to sing it. So it's a rather weighty responsibility carrying that theme over the centuries.
So here we've come from Prague to Broadway, mm-hmm. With our musical monolith.
And we have to go out to Long Island, the shark-infested waters off Long Island, where John Williams, in his theme for Jaws, once more felt the monolith take control of his compositional efforts. And in a little segment which is called Tourists on the Menu, the monolith appears not fleetingly, but very, very obviously.
He heard the whole thing.
He heard the whole thing, and throughout this Tourists on the Menu segment of the Jaws music, he plays with the theme over and over again, and it keeps reappearing. The monolith was too much to be denied.
Think of all these people who were visited by our musical monolith, John Williams, Robert Schumann, Carl Maria von Weber, yes.
and Alois Neruda and Franz Berwald. It's uncanny.
And it's also extraordinary company for Don Veigli, the actual composer of the All Things Considered theme.
You know, you write these things, and you don't know where they're coming from in your mind, or, you know. The thing that happens is that after the first two bars, nobody will track it, because that's where the originality comes in. You know, that part, see?
That's where we really begin to vary.
That's where, you know, we're different than anybody else.
Were you visited by a giant monolithic stone at any point?
To my knowledge, no.
Well, Don Veigli, on our 19th birthday, thank you very much for talking with us and for having written our theme.
Very welcome.
And thanks just the same to Martin Goldsmith of NPR's Performance Today for his discovery of the magical monolith theory of the All Things Considered theme.